Hello, Cleveland. Ladies, gentlemen, delegates, please put your hands together for tonight's keynote speaker, the man with the gifted hands, Dr. Ben Carson.
Hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for welcoming me. I want to welcome you back by thanking you for not being politically correct. One thing about me is I am not politically correct. If you're looking for somebody that is afraid of stepping on toes, then you found the wrong guy, because I have been known to walk over the toes of others to walk on the path of righteousness. We've had some wonderful speakers this week in this fine convocation. We've had Dana White, a man who came from nothing, less than nothing. He came from the city of Boston and made his money off a spectacle of naked men fighting each other. We have Peter Thiel, who is, despite his sinful lifestyle, a Volcel, who preserves his life energy similar to the way that the Jahabobites and the Argolites did in the Book of Neshaw. Thank you, Peter, for being you, and thank you for letting me be me. You know what? You learn something when you put your hands onto somebody's brainstem and you manipulate it to make their legs kick up in the air and pretend that they're marching when they're really lying down on the table. You learn that inside all of us is a gift, and that our only limitations are that which we put on ourselves, and that if you can put your hand on any part of the brain, you can break past the limits. And that is what Donald is doing to America. He's reaching his hand into our brains and making us walk. So, in conclusion, I want to thank the pyramids, which were actually spaceships that transported the aliens that people now describe as the Egyptians, that were defeated by the Hebrews, who were actually an ancient tribe of yeomen wizards. Something that informs everything I do. And amen. Deus in machina eternum forever.
Ben Carson, everybody. Ben Carson. He has the most gifted hands in all of politics. It's episode 26, everybody. It's Chapo. We're back, and we are talking the Republican National Convention. We've got a week's worth of speeches, of characters, and of laughs, and loves, and memories to discuss this week. And we'll be doing it with friend of the show, brother podcaster, Brian Quimby of Street Fight. Brian, what's up?
Hey, guys.
Peace be upon you. So glad that you're in our trap home for the first time. And we will be with you next week in Philadelphia covering the Democratic Convention as well, leading up to our live show on Thursday. Just a little preview. But what do you say, guys? Should we start the show?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's go, Jumbo. We are back. It's Chapo Trap House, episode 26. As I said before, it's me, Will Meneker, joined, as always, by Felix Biederman.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt Chrisman.
Greetings and salutations, m'ladies and gentlemen.
And as I've already mentioned, special guest Brian Quimby of the Street Fight Podcast.
The non-host half, actually, of the Street Fight Podcast.
The color man.
I love that. Color commentary. I'm sorry, Will. I'm cutting you off.
No, yeah. We're gonna be doing some anarchy in Philadelphia this week, but before we can get to that, before we can make new memories, we have to process the old memories, and that began on Monday of this past week when Brian, you, and Matt traveled to the city of Cleveland. The mistake by the lake for the Republican National Convention. And you went to what I thought a Monday was probably the hottest event of the entire convention. The Alex Jones Make America First Again. What was it called?
America First.
America First with Alex Jones, yeah. and friends.
It was originally supposed to be a way to basically intimidate the delegates with a show of Trump support if it had looked like Trump was going to get backstabbed at the convention. But once it became clear that he had it pretty much locked down, it morphed into this unity rally. And it had like a dozen sponsors. There was InfoWars. There were all these different weird groups that I'd never heard of before. Christians for Trump, Millennials for Trump, Bikers for Trump made a huge appearance. But so, yeah, it was basically sort of this a thing that had been intended to be a show of force and ended up just kind of being an end zone celebration for Trump's nomination.
Now, you mentioned Bikers for Trump. Brian, I noticed on your Twitter feed covering the day's events in Cleveland that the Bikers for Trump were lining up to shake the hands of the police officers who are working the event.
Yeah, we actually followed them in. We came in at the same time as the Bikers for Trump, so they're getting off the freeway and so are we. Like, we were pulling in, which, by the way, the day before that, my Facebook feed was filled with memes of like the a massive amount of bikers that are showing up right now in Cleveland, but it wasn't as impressive. I think that was a different picture that's photoshopped over and over again. Like, they cloned 10 bikers and just made the line look longer. But yeah, we came in with them. We actually came in with the Trump meme truck with the big, it's got like a big, huge bumper on the front that says Trump. It was to make sure that nobody blocked the freeway or anything. That was one of the memes that was showing up before we got there.
There's a big cow catcher on the front of it to clear all the protesters out of the way, to make way for Trump.
It kind of freaked me out a little bit, though, like, because we're going to this America First rally, which absolutely just sounds like one of those British, like a racist British thing, because that's what they always call their, like, we're usually not as elegant about the rallies that we have. It's usually like the whites only rally or something in the United States, but in Britain it's always like, you know, this is the British First rally, but it's basically their clan. That's what I thought we were going to see, which I guess we kind of were, in a way.
But did you see the bikers shaking hands with the police?
Yeah, they stood across the street. The police were lined up across the street like they do for any protest, sitting on horses. And the first thing the bikers did when they pulled up, first of all, a biker gang called the Gunslingers.
Yeah, don't fuck with my gang. We're called the Grim Reaper Laser Gunners.
Yeah, and so the Gunslingers pull up, and the first thing they do is, I guess, their Jax gets off the bike, and they walks over and shakes each one of the cops' hands in a line.
Like a total badass outlaw, man. That's the fucking baddest
fucking
thing you
crazy.
Can do.
You know, the Hells Angels were so crazy that they would stake out police stations and wait for the cops to come out and thank them.
Yeah. I honestly think that the purpose,
I'm sorry, can I just say that this makes me sick thinking about just the once proud tradition of outlaw biker gangs in America just lining up to shake the hands of the police. Actually, what I imagine is that, like, the cops, like, they come out to line up, and then out of nowhere you just hear, and it's a single biker clapping, and then it just becomes a cascade of applause as all the bikers, outlaws, pirates, and I don't know, highwaymen just gather to cheer the police and Trump.
I honestly think that the purpose of this event was to disabuse people of the notion that bikers are cool. Because not only did they do that, but the head of the Bikers for Trump was one of the speakers during this interminable thing. It was all day. It started around noon and went to like 4 or 5 o'clock. And so it was just this collection of complete weirdo random people and some higher profile folks. But the head of Bikers for Trump went up there, and he gave this long, boring, very low-energy speech about... And it was mostly... It wasn't even about Trump. It was about how, you know, people think that bikers, they sell drugs and that they do crimes, but actually there's plenty of men, respectable members of the community who enjoy to do motorcycling, Jay
These
Leno.
These are the fucking wild
Jay
hogs.
Leno likes to ride motorcycles. People think that motorcyclists are these badass outlaws, but actually we're incredibly fucking lame.
Yeah.
Square as hell.
But
It's like model trains for people who aren't spectrum enough.
People with enough upper body strength to hold up a bike.
It is sad. He kept throwing out. It was like he was doing like a job interview or something. Or he was probably making a viral video for the Facebook group Tattoo Acceptance in the Workplace. I don't really. It was boring though, and he did. The first thing he said is like, there are bikers at the top of many industries in the United States. One being Jay Leno. I don't know what his politics are, but he's one of us. Okay, and I was like, oh, you guys.
If you like your bike, you can keep it.
Hey, let me tell you about motorcycling. Stay on the road. Hey, did you guys hear about Jax Keller?
I think one of the things, and I said this on Street Fight too, is that like I think these bikers for Trump are dudes that really just want to be in like a charity group, like a Toys for Tots type of thing, but that's not cool enough, so they have to call it a gang. They have to name it like the Gunslingers. Like they're a biker gang that's more focused on like breast cancer, Toys for Tots, than selling men.
Okay, the next thing I wanted to ask you about from the from Monday's rally, Matt, you mentioned that there was an amazing musical guest who sung quite an inspirational song.
So this thing was it was a co-production of Alex Jones and Roger Stone, and Roger Stone spoke later after Jones.
For people who are maybe perhaps aren't familiar, Roger Stone is a longtime Republican rat fucker and dirty trickster. It started out with the Nixon administration, but he's been in New York State politics for a long time. A lot of people speculate that Roger Stone was the person who basically set up Elliot Spitzer through his many, many connections in the world of prostitution, swinging, and kink.
He is a perfect, like, decadent pervert Republican. He's like the upper echelon. He's like the domino mask, eyes wide shut Republican elite.
I also learned so that he had a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back.
He does, right on the small, between his shoulder blades. So he had a street team there because he was selling his book about the Clintons. And he had a guy there, like this old dude in a gray ponytail who we talked to. He had a shirt that had a Shepherd Fairey thing of Clinton, Bill Clinton, and it said rape on it. And we talked to him for a little bit, but he was there with this young woman. She was like in her 20s, maybe early 30s. I think she was like a Russian immigrant or something. And she did a song. It was like a 90s-esque sort of post-grunge Alanis Morissette song. And there's this long pause, and all of a sudden she just goes,
political correctness.
And I just died because it's like a fucking course.
It's like if Lisa Loeb were racist.
Exactly.
And you say Benghazi was about a video.
when Lil Wayne says it, it's okay. When I say it.
Yeah. But the other thing that really struck me is that there were never more than maybe 200 people for the event over the course of the day. And at every point, they were at least matched and perhaps outnumbered by reporters. There was
including
honestly,
you guys.
We were there. Saw Jeb Lund. We saw Tim Heidecker and Vic Berger. Saw Chris Hayes. who's a fan of the show, by the way.
We just outed him.
Yeah. Deal with
He's
it.
In trouble with He's in trouble with MSNBC now.
David Korn, who I wanted to push into the fucking river. And most disgustingly, Jamie Kirchick was there, sweating in a pinstripe suit, sitting on the fucking hill, writing in his little note.
No, just a slight digression on Jake Kirk. He had an article last week saying it would be a shame if the military had to intervene and take over our democracy because of Donald Trump. I wouldn't want that to happen.
So when Jamie Kirchick is on the road and away from his handlers, does he have like a spotter with him that tosses him fish that he can catch in his mouth and chew with his fucking dolphin teeth?
I mean, he's swollen, man. He's mad swollen. But the way that the thing was set up is that they... The stage was right next to the river, and then there was a hill that everyone sat on, looking down on it, and then there was a concrete running path and plaza above it, which is where the vendors were, and that's also where most of the reporters were. And it felt like a Victorian surgical operating theater. It felt like these people were staring down.
Like they're gonna bring
specimens.
They're gonna bring Elephant Man
exactly.
on stage.
It was exactly like that. Like these people were the Elephant Men, and the coastal elites are up there, like writing in their notebooks. Oh, interesting, fascinating.
Alex Jones gets on stage and he's like, "I want to tell you something. I'm gonna tell you something about the globalists right now. If you look at this disgusting globalist freak, you'll notice the only thing untouched by the globalists are his genitals."
Yeah, they were, I mean, the first time we really got to see him get fired up even was like Eric Andre got on stage.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I wanted to talk about this. This is the next thing that I saw from there. Eric Andre, a comedian who just doesn't give a fuck, really, and I give him a lot of props. He fucking made a lot of waves at the RNC, man. He had some great videos coming out this week, but you guys saw him get on stage with Global News, InfoWars, Prison Planet Report.
Oh, no, get that Daily Show guy up here, because he was trying to get on stage. He had a big mic taped to a pole. He was trying to get on stage, and I thought they were going to fucking kill him, because they kept pushing him back, and they were screaming in his face, and at one point, because I was up on the hill, and he was down next to the stage, I saw him fall down, and I'm like, oh, they're stomping him to death. But then, so I went down next to the stage to see what was going on, and he was up at that point, and then he was trying to get back in, and Alex Jones goes, "Oh, let the globalist up here. Let this Daily Show globalist up here. Let's see what he's got on him." And so he came up, and he goes to him. He goes,
I mean, you seem like you're upset. I want you to have sex with my wife. So just trying to be shocking.
Here's my hotel key. Come fuck my. And he goes, "Oh yeah, Daily Show comedy, of course. I'll be so hip, yeah. Daily Show, like that's not a Pentagon black op, right? Yeah, sure.
The Daily Show's not a Pentagon weapon program.
I'm not on the Daily Show. I'm on MySpace."
Okay, well, let's go.
That was the most interesting part of the whole thing, was that the Daily Show's a Pentagon black op. I have never heard.
I didn't
that
know that. That was pretty impressive. I mean, that's another thing, and one of many things that those guys have in common with the more strident, quote unquote, anti-imperialists, is the belief that any like vaguely left of center media property is operated by the deep state.
So while you guys were there, hobnobbing, taking it all in, did you speak to any of the crowd who was there in earnest?
I actually came away from it with a good amount of sympathy for a lot of these people, because I went to a Trump event. I think we talked about it on the show, I think in May, in suburban Cincinnati. It was one of the wealthier bedroom communities in north of Cincinnati, and the crowd there was really a bunch of pretty vile, smug, chubby, comfortable suburbanites who were clearly getting their rocks off that they got to, you know, be politically incorrect. But this was, you know, an InfoWars event in northern Ohio. These are some hard scrabble folks. These people were not like smug suburbanites. These people had seen some shit. There was this one dude who was very animated in the front of the thing who really stuck with me. He had on a tie-dyed Trump shirt, black socks pulled up almost to his knees, and no front teeth what to speak of. And that was sort of emblematic for me. Like, these are people who have had it tough. And listening to them have conversations and stuff, the stuff that they were talking about, they had obviously some dumb fucking opinions about Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. But a lot of the things they were talking about was deindustrialization and trade. That was the thing that they were really kind of fixated on. And even when they talked about illegal immigration, the crowd anyway, they were really talking about it in terms of jobs. So, like, it really is how you see the way that people who have been fucked over, if you speak to them in sort of their language, you can kind of get them on board with what is, in general, a pretty shitty policy because of the fact that you at least are acknowledging the fucking things that are going on in their lives and in the world. I heard one woman talking about how Hillary Clinton is, you know, above the law and how there's one set of rules for people at the top and one on the bottom. And I'm like, fuck, that she ain't wrong. I can't argue that she's not right about that. So, yeah, it was a more, there was more pathos in this crowd than among Trump events I've been to in the past.
Brian, what was your take? Did you talk to anyone?
I did. I talked to a bunch of people. You know what? It was really mostly people that I would have, I felt like it was people I grew up with. I grew up in like a suburb of Columbus, Ohio, like a kind of half rural, half like suburban. And it was basically that. It was just broke people that didn't have jobs that are probably been shuffled into service, like 15 service jobs in the last 5 years and are just fucking tired of it, you know?
One lady late in the event, she said, I think she was trying to cover for the fact that it was relatively poorly attended. She goes, we have so many people here this week who are going to be fighting and making their voices heard. They weren't here today because they actually have jobs, because that's like a classic move that they always pull on left-wing demonstrators is, yeah, people aren't demonstrating because they have to work. And they're like, well, you just said fuck you to everybody who's in this on this event. Who actually did show up. It's like, well, what about them?
Just tell us we're all jobs.
Yeah, that's what she did. And she didn't get much of a response from the audience.
And another thing about like the bikers and stuff, were just a lot of, there were a lot of veterans too. It was like the veteran bikers that are like, I didn't fight for this country so I could press one for English. It was just that crowd. They didn't seem dangerous. They seemed old. They were bikers that look up to Jay Leno and a bunch of kind of, like he said, what I guess we'd call them Lonnies, like just people that, you know, probably spend most of their time like smoking cigarettes and drinking cheap beer on their front porch, got a chance to come out and be not politically correct. Another conversation that was happening a lot around there, and Alex Jones even mentioned Ron Paul's name in the speech. He's like, we've tried over and over again. We tried with Ron Paul. Now we have Donald Trump, and it looks like it's going to happen. And you could walk around and every single person was talking about bankers. And I think that is like, that's so emblematic. Well, first of all, it's probably anti-Semitic. It's I was probably missing that subtext. But there was a lot of talk about the Federal Reserve and gold and stuff like that. I think a lot of people that were let down by Ron Paul not winning. Like I said, we were among the InfoWars people. So a lot of the issues that they were most focused on were like fluoride in the water and 9/11 being an inside job.
I was going to say, that's my favorite song from the 1960s and 70s by Iron Butterfly. Fluoride in the water.
Chemtrails in the sky.
Autism in my son's vaccine.
But the thing about 9/11 was so funny to me, because the other big focus of the event that we haven't talked about yet was throwing Hillary in jail. The big shirt.
Oh, that was a big chant.
Hillary for prison. They had these Hillary for prison shirts and that they were selling, and they had shirts that a lot of people had that they were selling because he's a fucking snake oil salesman. He's selling T-shirts and vitality potions and stuff like that. But what I thought was really funny about that, I wish I had been. Oh yeah, you could have cleaned up. But what was so funny to me is
I wish I had been selling those T-shirts.
They were so fixated on throwing Hillary in jail, presumably over maybe Benghazi. But the thing they kept talking about was the emails, and I just kept thinking, you people think that George Bush did 9/11. Shouldn't you be focused on getting the guy who killed 3,000 Americans to start an illegal war in jail before you move on to the lady who did the emails? It just seems like an odd priorities.
But actually, this leads into something that I wanted to ask about. Like, well, while you're talking about, like, okay, so there's this Alex Jones rally we all know Alex Jones' shtick. And as you said, a lot of people in the crowd are focused on things like trade and banks and the fact that, like, you know, there are these larger forces at play that have diminished their quality of life that they really don't have much control over. Do you think that, like, that in a way is what accounts for belief in things like in 9/11 being an inside job, or chemtrails, or fluoride in the water? Like, Brian, like, you talked about chemtrails on Street Fight before, and I think you've mentioned it. The thing that fascinates me about the chemtrail conspiracy theory is, like, if you believe it's true, like, what do? Yeah, you can't, like, yeah, it's just like, that, you can't fight it. Like, you just have to assume that you're being dosed all the time by the government. And then how can you even, if you believe that to be true, how do you even believe your own, assessment of the world and situation?
I always wonder that also about 9/11. That was something Brett, the guy I do Street Fight with, when we first started doing the radio, he would joke around and be like, well, I got my questions about 9/11. And I finally was just like, hey, man, what are you going to do if we find out Bush did 9/11? Like, what do you think is going to happen? What's the end result here? Nobody goes to jail. Nobody cares. And it doesn't end. So even if it was a conspiracy, even if chemtrails are giving me nightmares and my water is controlling my brain to vote for Hillary, like, I can't do anything about it, so I'm just gonna go do it. You're never gonna stop it.
Those things are they're basically dramatic and sort of narratively rich symbols of the greater sense of alienation from any sense that government is representative of them. You know, and because that's not, yeah, you feel that, but that feeling is sort of just this oppressive sensation. You want to express it outwardly in a way that is dramatic and in a way that is powerful. And the symbolic power of the idea that the government is literally putting shit in the air to, like, reduce the population, or that it's killing its own citizens to start a war.
To sap our will to live, right? Or, like, you know,
there's
a
narrative power there, but it's an expression just of a real and undeniable sense that the government doesn't give a shit about you.
Well, and then the conditions of everyday life,
fertilizer, if it helped the bottom line of international capital. And that's 100% accurate. But because we don't have any kind of class solidarity, we don't have class consciousness, we don't think in those terms. We think in terms of conspiracy. We think in terms of shit we see in movies. And that fits into that framework.
And, like, the chemtrail thing is great because it is quite literally vaporous. You know, it's like the perfect manifestation of this. But I think you're exactly right. The bottom line is that for whatever reason, probably thousands of them, the conditions of daily life are sapping our will to live and fight back.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I knew this guy in Chicago who was the best type of person you could be, in that he was a libertarian dubstep DJ. Just like, I mean, ladies, you have $500 to create a man, $300 libertarian, another $300 dubstep DJ. You know, spend your money wisely.
$2 loyalty.
Loyalty, yeah. $3 great sex. But he was really into Sandy Hook. And he thought Sandy Hook was totally fake, and he thought Boston bombing was totally fake. And he'd post all these videos, and you can tell that his, like, other, he only knew, like, other dubstep DJs, because, like Jacob Fat Beats Ron would reply to, like, all his new videos, be like, come on, you need to give it a rest, man. Just give up. But he was like, no, fuck you, I'm gonna find out the truth. But then within 2 hours, he'd be like, so, anybody in the market for some Bluetooth headphones? And it's like, dude, you think the government pulled off a massive false flag mass death event so they could create an authoritarian fascist regime? But you're like, oh, I don't know about the treble levels and Beats by Dre headphones.
That fundamental incoherence was on display at this event, because you've got a bunch of people here who believe that the government, world government, exists. It's controlled by ancient lizard creatures who spray poison into the air and into the water to control your mind. And if that doesn't work, they have an army of crisis actors to do false flags to influence the media that they completely control anyway. But voting for Donald Trump is going to stop them. That's an incoherent set of beliefs. You cannot believe in that level of total control and think that one douchebag from a reality show being president can stop it.
Yeah, and there's varying degrees. I think that one of the things that people don't like kind of look at when it comes to chemtrails or any of these things is that there's these varying degrees of conspiracy.
Of commitment, and varying, right?
And there's varying degrees of there's varying degrees of conspiracy and sources for these conspiracies. So like I have a lot, I my Facebook feed kind of runs the whole thing. And like there are, I would consider them fairly moderate Republicans because I see a lot of really crazy ones on my Facebook feed, but that believe that Hillary Clinton has had a ton of people murdered over the years. It's not just like Vince Foster and kind of all those things. So once you start, I think once you start believing in those things, it becomes easier to start feeding into all of the other things that make her seem way more dangerous than Donald Trump. Like the more mainstream groups, I think, have posted things about Hillary killing people. So it's like, if you can believe that conspiracy, I can't imagine it's that much harder to believe, you know, that 9/11 was an inside job or that the fluoride in the water is giving me, like I said, nightmares. I think that's the main thing that they think it does.
I totally picture Hillary being like, I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want the places where he worked burned to the ground. I want it done today. I mean, what I can't believe and what I simply, I mean, is cuckoo territory, is Hillary just going like, you know, why don't we use our contacts in the nonprofit sector to force Haiti to buy only one kind of grain from you?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy, people.
Yeah, I mean, like, the real conspiracy is right in front of your face. They don't hide it at all. In 2000, you know, we go on these absurd conspiracies about who created ISIS or whatever. In 2006, Nawaf Obeid, the sort of PR guy for Prince Turki, the former head of Saudi intelligence and current ambassador to the UK for Saudi Arabia, wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post basically saying that the Saudis would be forced, in his words, to fund al-Qaeda in Iraq if America didn't pressure al-Maliki out of power. We know that we were running guns to Jabhat al-Nusra out of the embassy in Benghazi. We know all this shit. We know, you know, the correlation between donations to Democratic Party candidates and arms sales and to both parties. It's right out there in the open. They don't even bother to hide it. But it's more appealing to think that there's a hidden conspiracy that if you just uncover it and tell enough people, it's going to stop it, rather than the reality that the conspiracy is out there in the open and just no one gives a shit.
Were there any more events or people from Monday or Wednesday of note before we move on to the actual convention?
We saw Milo.
Oh, right, Milo.
I gave him the hex because we saw him and Brian got a picture with him, and the day later he got banned from Twitter for all time. And it was really funny because it's exactly like, he looks exactly like you'd think, like this rope, this like fascist Terminator with the hair and the glasses, and he's got a bunch of shit on his arms, and he's got like gold dog tags, and he's wearing all black. He's like a disco Nick Gillespie. And then when people saw him, there was just this scrum of just sad, unfuckable dullards wanting their picture taken with him. No offense to Brian. The funniest one, though, because, you know, he was doing his usual shtick that I'm sure he does basically everywhere he goes and must be hell for him, and I think he totally deserves it, where these people come up and nervously get next to him, and he has to get a picture with them while avoiding too much body contact with these greasy motherfuckers. But there were two guys standing sort of away from the scrum. And by the way, I think I didn't realize it until after we left, but I'm pretty sure one of the guys there talking to him was Mike Cernovich. But I didn't recognize him because I don't...
Gorilla mindset, yeah, fam.
But
yo, he's my fucking inspiration.
Was he using alpha posture?
Totally. He was dominating the space. But so this older guy in a Breitbart Bill DeWall shirt is talking to another guy, and he's all hype about Milo being there, but the other guy doesn't know who he is. And so he's like, oh, you don't know that? That's Milo. Milo, he's amazing. He goes to colleges and he just does gay stuff. He's just gay and he just destroys liberalism. And then later on, like, he couldn't contain himself because he didn't have the confidence to go up and introduce himself. But from afar, he yelled, "Keep kicking ass, Milo."
That was a beautiful. Beautiful.
Can I just say, to me, I'm glad I'm not the only one who habitually mispronounces his name.
Yeah, but you mispronounced his ridiculous Greek last name, not the relatively straightforward two-syllable first name.
It's fucking beautiful to see these people that you know, voted against gay marriage in 2004 now just rolling out just to really, they want to hug and kiss up on a gay man. They're so happy to have a gay guy at their rallies this time.
My favorite moment, my favorite other guy, the last guy I want to talk about, was from the Monday rally, and he was this black dude, and he's gone sort of viral now. The Young Cons did a thing about him, and Brian had a video with him, but he was this black dude who was going like, "Down with Obama, down with Obama." He just kept chanting it. But the best moment was during Alex Jones' speech, when he's riling everybody up about the globalists, he yells, "Come on, Obama, bring on one of your false flags! Go ahead and do a false flag! We're ready for you!" And I was like, Jesus, dude, I'm not ready for a false flag. Shut up.
I mean, we would have been relatively safe because everybody there either had a gun or a long knife. So hopefully they would have stopped.
Wait, did you see people open carrying? Yeah.
Open carry. Did you see I got a picture. There was a guy with a big Trump picture and a shovel and a sign that said Trump Wall Building Unit or something like that. And like, I was like, can I take a picture here? And he was like, yeah. So I put the hard hat on and I was going to hold the shovel. And he's like, no, put the shovel over there. I got something better. I put the shovel over to the side and he handed me a gun and just took a picture of me with the gun in my hand.
Oh my God. We're going to make that the icon for this week's show.
It was my favorite moment of the irresponsibility of handing random people guns.
They're like, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you want a picture, buddy? Yeah, I just met you. Here, have a gun.
We handed a dreaded anarchist a gun. I don't understand that. I don't understand how that's safe, I guess.
But Brian, you're a white man, mm-hmm. though. Mm-hmm. You come across as pretty flat,
I'm
Brian.
Safe. I'm white, and I'm male, and I'm 37. So I'm safe, you know? You can hand me all the guns you want.
See, like, I feel like I would come across as just a white guy. But you got to come across as a white man.
Yeah, he'd have beat you up with the gun.
Definitely.
He would have pointed it at you. Hold the shovel and then pointed the gun at you and taken care of you.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. He'll start you out on a shovel, pussy. You said that Wednesday was kind of boring. It didn't really meet the crescendo of Monday's fun.
Well, there was some good stuff. We got to see like delegates walking to and from the convention space, which was fun because they were a terrifying collection. I mean, these are the smug, well-fed shitheads who I really hate, and like everybody looked like a Ralph Steadman drawing or a Tim and Eric character. They were grotesque. Like these women with just these incredibly thick makeup, mascara on in 95 degrees with like straw cowboy hats. Just a nightmare assemblage.
So that was the view from the streets of Cleveland, but really, the rest of the country saw the view from inside the Quicken Loans.
Quicken Loans. Which is arena. So fucking perfect. This thing, this fucking crooked mortgage lender.
Yeah, inside the Quicken Loans arena. So I got to be honest with you, Matt. I know you watched some of it on TV when you weren't there. Felix, I know you watched some as well for Diggler. I read about it, but the only things I could bear watching were, of course, Vic Berger's videos of the convention speeches.
His Giuliani one was
genius. That's what I want to talk about. That's the first one, because he went on Monday night, and that was the highlight of Monday, was Rudy Giuliani's speech.
I feel like I'm a hipster of the RNC now, because for me, I feel like everybody's talking. I mean, all of the dumb lanyards are talking about Melania Trump's plagiarism, which who on earth could give a
fucking no one gives a shit.
Scintilla of a shit about that. And yeah, everyone loved Giuliani basically like turning into a werewolf.
Okay, sorry. Pro tip, pro tip for Rudy Giuliani. If you were going to get teeth whitening, you have to do both the top and bottom. Because if you only do one set...
You can afford to do both sides.
If you only do one, your top teeth, all it does is call attention to how yellow your bottom teeth are.
He looks like he puts his bottom row of teeth in a bedpan every night.
Oh, God!
That's the fucking color they are.
But Matt, Monday night was Giuliani and Melania. Those got the biggest burn.
Yeah,
what was your hit?
Because this was earlier, not enough, a lot of people were watching. But and maybe it's because I was high when I was watching it. And I put too much importance on it, but. There was a chunk of three straight speeches. This was during like the operator's Benghazi part in the early part of the evening, where Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, came up, and he did this whole speech about, you know, the warriors of America and how they've been betrayed, and the whole time he's like fighting back tears, and he's just like this raw wire of agree. He's like Rambo at the end of the second one, you know. Then let us win. And then Vile Rat's mom came out, and I don't know if they whacked her out with a bunch of Thorazine or she had been fucking concussed, but she seemed genuinely damaged. And she's like actually basically having a breakdown on the stage while everyone's banging and screaming.
That's sad.
It was.
And then they brought out two of the operators from 13 Hours.
Jim from The Office.
It was the real guys. The guys who were played by those dudes. I think it was Ironhide and Lockjaw. I can't remember. But
we're Rocksteady and Bebop.
Yeah, these guys came out, and one of them wearing kind of like a sequined. It seemed like almost a sequined bolero jacket. It was. He looked like a country musician. He looked like Brad Paisley or something. But these guys came out, and then for a solid half hour, they just recounted what happened at Benghazi. Like, there was no inflection. It was not a speech. It was like testimony. They're like, and then we pulled up to the compound, and I was looking for Ambassador Stevens, and I couldn't find him. And then it's like, there's no drama to it. There's no rhetorical, filigree. It's just this guy, these two guys going back and forth and recounting this event, and every time they'd say something like, and then one of the terrorists popped up and I put two in his chest, and the crowd would go crazy. Like, that's the only crowd reaction was when they talked about killing
someone.
This is
weird. This is disturbing.
And for me, I mean, like, I have resisted this whole notion of, of the Trump campaign as fascists because, you know, it seems ahistorical and overly hysterical, but watching those three speeches in a row was the first time I really felt like I was watching something fascist, because just the terrifying and grotesque emotional exhibitionism it's a very specific thing. And it was all about this idea that these people had been betrayed, that like they have been betrayed by their government and their hearts are broken over it. And like they've
stabbed
seen
in
them
the back.
Die while they're just wallowing in this idea of being of just decay and being humiliated by these forces that control the government and the need that it needed to be redeemed. So it felt fascist in a way that nothing else I had seen in the Trump campaign really felt. And then, of course, we'll talk about it later, but then Trump's speech just put a fucking bow on it in terms of fascism. Holy shit.
Felix, what were your takes on Giuliani and Melania?
Well, as somebody who had to watch both, so there was an interesting contrast because we sort of begin primetime with Giuliani doing a sort of version of Hitler in Munich in 36, if he was a balding manlet with diarrhea-colored teeth. you know, just like very openly. He sounds like the Norse fire from V for Vendetta, Alan Moore thing. But, you know, with a weird speech impediment.
America!
America, what happened?
He's so fucking fired.
He's like, what's going on?
He sounded like a fucking cash. But then, you know, Melania gets up, and Melania gives the same speech that every first lady in the history of these televised conventions have given. It's the same fucking thing.
Saying that she plagiarized Michelle Obama is like when people get sued for using the lyrics to Happy Birthday in a book or something like that.
Yeah, but I've seen guys call this the biggest story of the year in the election, which is like, I mean, talk about a fucking bubble. No one outside of media gives a fucking shit about speech plagiarism. Nobody. And the only reason that these fucking morons like, you know, Jake Tapper or whoever give a shit about this is because for any given American journalist, plagiarism is the worst scandal because they think it's the only journalistic scandal you can have.
Yeah.
Passing off fraudulent evidence for a war or just re-releasing White House press releases in 2002 about how Pat Tillman was a hero when he played Pee Wee Warner football too, or glossing over stories or accepting the White House's reports on drone casualties. These are all fine. It's fine to be a complete bootlicker who misses every lead and blows everything and accelerates U.S. policy at the behest of governments. But the only bad thing you can really do is to do plagiarism. So they treat that like a capital crime.
Wasn't she just saying basically like, Donald Trump and I believe that hard work really pays off and stuff like that?
Half the reason, as Andrew Bashful Coward pointed out, is that they're probably fantasizing about sweatily scolding Melania. Ooh, you've done bad, Madam First Lady. You have to take your shoes off. Melania, my name's Morning Buddy Ben, and I wrote the story about your plagiarism. Your punishment is that you have to use my face as a washcloth.
I did like the Giuliani speech because it reminded me of, like, 80s pro wrestling when they were all gacked up on cocaine and testosterone and they just told him, go out there and get people fired up for your match. That's what I felt like Rudy Giuliani was told to do. Just go up and get people fired up for Melania. Or yeah, it was Melania.
What he reminded me of was Fred Willard's character from A Mighty Wind, where he was like, America, what happened?
Hey, what happened? As you know, back in 1970, I started on a series called What Happened? And every time something would go wrong, I would look at the camera and say, hey, what happened?
He was the evolution of Adam Sandler in Rain Over Me. That's him, yes, at the end, yes, of the movie when he gets over his grief. He's like, I'm going to tell a freaking speech at the RNC.
Okay, so moving on. Tuesday night, okay, that was the Ted Cruz betrayal, the vile, disgusting fish lord Ted Cruz betrayed Trump in front of everybody.
No, that was Wednesday. Oh, fuck, Tuesday was Chris Christie bellowing like Captain Lou Albano.
Can we talk about
minutes.
Ted Cruz, though?
Forget Christie. Let's talk about Ted Cruz.
Yeah, let's talk
about,
so Ted Cruz made the big splash by going up there and refusing to endorse Trump, okay? And then immediately was treated to an avalanche of the worst kind of like liberal well, you know what, say what you will about Ted Cruz, he showed a lot of courage and integrity out there tonight. And what I gotta say that is he showed a lot of smarts, I think, but that's
well,
as far
we'll see
as
about
I'm gonna
that. I don't know. This really? Might fucking blow up in his face.
It might blow up in his face.
I see a future where Trump loses in November, and in the conservative cosmology, Ted Cruz becomes the Ralph Nader.
Really?
Of the 2016 election. Absolutely. The anger to Cruz the next day when we were there was palpable. There was a guy holding a whiteboarded sign that said, "Lion Ted Cruz, you suck. Go back to Canada," or something like that. There was one dude with like a little Ted Cruz stick pin in his hat, and a woman was talking to him, and she's like, "Wow, you're very brave to wear that."
I didn't hear the Ted Cruz speech when it happened. So, like, I assumed he told Donald Trump to go fuck himself or something on stage, because they were furious at him the next day. And
he said to the delegates, "Vote your conscience," and he wouldn't say the name. He didn't say Trump's name. And then in typical Ted Cruz fashion, you know, when he was like asked about it later, he was just like, the man insulted my wife and father, and I'm not going to just come to him like some kind of servile puppy dog. And that phrase, servile puppy dog, is so Ted Cruz to me, because it's awful. It's an awful turn of phrase, because in the context, the word servile is completely unnecessary, but he threw it in there anyway because it's the type of thing that stupid people think sounds intelligent.
Yeah. Add an adjective to make you sound more intellectual.
I mean, my joke about that was, you know, the morning after, I said, "Call me crazy, but do I find myself admiring Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg this morning? I mean, say what you will about the guy, but he stood up to the big bully and for his beliefs in front of everybody."
I mean, Ted Cruz's dad did kill JFK, though. So that's kind of an important thing. I don't know how he was qualified to be president with that.
Ted Cruz's dad was like one of the characters in the flashback scenes in Oliver Stone's JFK, who's hanging around Guy Bannister's office in New Orleans going, "It should take an inspired act of God to kill that Maricon Kennedy."
You're a good-looking man, Raphael.
Okay, Peter Thiel. I didn't watch Peter Thiel. Did anyone watch Peter Thiel's speech?
I watched Peter Thiel.
What the fuck was that like?
He was manic as fuck. He was like, had weird head tics. It was clearly taking a lot out of him to be in front of all those people, because we know he's one of those fucking weirdos who like stays in a windowless dark room,
hermetically
like,
sealed, you know, Faraday
stares
cage
at the
or
wall
something.
While he thinks about ways to, like, you know, arbitrage human blood or something. But it was what you'd expect. It's this maniacal fixation on innovation at all costs. Ugh. Like, he just wants us to innovate because we're being held back, and we need a president who will innovate. Like, apparently one of the things he complained about was that they still use floppy disks at nuclear sites. And it's like, yeah, that's because they can't be hacked, you fucking moron. And they're durable.
Yeah, they fucking work.
You really want somebody to be able to fucking press an app and launch a nuke? Do you think that's a great idea for security? But no, because it's old, so it's bad.
Peter Thiel is a Bond villain because he's like trying to sell the government nuclear systems on like his cloud system that only
right.
he can access.
And then once it goes online, it's like, oh, look at here. Somebody has put a back door into the system that allows him to launch it his will, huh? Someone's going to be getting a volcano fort from the government.
He's up there like doing a Bond villain speech, like, oh, sometimes the fox chases his own tail but misses the apple.
I was pretty disappointed that he doesn't actually have an accent. I was hoping he did, but he doesn't.
For the purpose, in the Chapo universe, that's how Peter Thiel talks.
Yes.
So. He's like an 80s action movie villain, so he just has to have some kind of vaguely European accent. You know?
He's all the guys that took over Nakatomi Plaza.
Were there any other highlights from the convention floor before we get to the big daddy himself?
I don't think so. I was excited for Dana White, but I missed that. So I watched Donald Trump, though. I got to see his speech. I was like, well, if we're going to have a Hitler, I want to see his first big speech.
Man, okay. So it was Hitler-y, too.
So, yeah, I didn't watch the Trump speech. I only read about it. But break it down for us. It was,
well, he come out, and he just is like, America is crumbling and under attack from armies, unseen armies outside our borders and within. It needs to be cleansed and purified and made whole. I mean, it was just unleashed fascism. And As I said, that's something I've been resistant to call it because it seems like it's people getting overly dramatic, and it's also a cynical way to try to get people to get excited for Hillary because she's better in comparison. But and also because calling it fascism really does normalize just the boring daily awfulness of the status quo. I mean, during this week, while everyone's freaking out about the horribleness of the RNC, we killed 80 people in Syria by accident, and it never even made the news. It was like, oh, well, that's why pencils have erasers. What are you going to do? And then, you know, and how many deportations are happening in the face of it by Obama during this wringing hands about how terrible Trump is. And, of course, the blood on Hillary's hands from Iraq and Libya and things. And, you know, I was thinking, well, Americans are too coddled to become paramilitaries. You know, we're not going to have brown shirts in America because people are too fat and comfortable to do that.
And look up to Jay Leno. The shock troops can't look up to Jay Leno.
Right.
Or they're not going to scare me.
But the brown shirts, yeah, they really emerged out of the context of like a time when politics was militarized. You know, like every party had a paramilitary wing. Like there were communists.
Yeah, we don't have any really violent communist groups in America.
We saw 10 teenaged wobblies at the convention, and they immediately got enveloped by 14 cops to keep them away from four libertarian nerds holding signs that said socialism sucks. I mean, that's not fighting in the streets, you know. But watching Trump at the end of that week, it really did make me feel like this whole movement, at least rhetorically and so far it's only rhetoric, it really is different than anything I've seen before in American politics. And it creeped me out. It really creeped me out.
Yeah, he was scary. He was screaming, and it really did. It reminded me of all those videos you see when you're a kid of Hitler, like, waving his arms around and shit. Behind, like, waving his arms and pounding on a thing. He's the first president I've seen that doesn't do that stupid fucking thumb thing, where he doesn't put his thumb all the way up.
Oh, right. It at people. Yeah. Bill Clinton was the master of that.
He fetishized these individual anecdotes of Americans being killed, basically, by illegal immigrants, by terrorists, by Black Lives Matter, quote unquote, assassins. And he would just like go through this litany of people who these good, decent Americans who've been victimized.
They had a speaker at one of the nights, some grieving mom whose son was killed.
They had three people whose family members were killed by illegal immigrants, and they just told the stories of their deaths. Like, that was the whole point, the reason that they were up there. Yeah, like I said, the speech was, it was incredibly long, the longest ever in the modern era, by a candidate being nominated. And it started off with this litany of grievances, of death, of threat, of crime in the streets, even though crime, I mean, all the fucking data nerds shit their pants because he kept talking about how crime is up, and they're like, actually, yeah, it's a 30-year low, and it's like, fine, but that's not what people feel.
That's not
like
gonna persuade, yeah, people don't feel that way at all.
People watch the media, people feel under siege because of what they watch, because we're all just in this hyper-mediated realm where, I mean, that's what you see is more real than anything somebody's going to fucking tweet at you or write in a fucking Washington Post column.
And it's also
we need Marion Cobretti to take these streets back.
It's also rejection of values. That's a big thing these people can't fathom, that tens of millions of people are rejecting their concept of liberal values, that it's not for everybody, that a lot of people are just disgusted and annoyed by them. They can't even fucking comprehend it. So they think that they can logic these people back to their side.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's emotive. I actually was kind of so like disturbed by the speech that I actually went back and looked at Adorno, good old Marxist cultural critic Theodore Adorno. He wrote when he was in the U.S. Hiding out from the Nazis during World War II. He wrote an essay about fascist propaganda, I think mostly in radio, that he listened to when he was living in California. And one of his essays, I just wanted to read just a couple lines, because when I look back at them after looking at Trump, it kind of freaked me out. The programs, talking about fascist speeches and propaganda proposes. The programs are abstract and vague. The fulfillments are spurious and illusory because the promise expressed by fascist oratory is nothing but destruction itself. It is hardly accidental that all fascist agitators dwell upon the imminence of catastrophes of some kind. Whereas they warn of impending danger, they and their listeners get a thrill out of the idea of inevitable doom without even making a clear-cut distinction between the destruction of their foes and of themselves. One of the West Coast demagogues once said, "I want to say that you men and women, you and I are living in the most fearful time of the history of the world. We're also living in the most gracious and most wonderful time. This is the agitator's dream, a union of the horrible and the wonderful, a delirium of annihilation masked as salvation."
that just about sums up the Republican National Perfectly. Convention, folks. That puts a perfect cap on it. But we still got to talk, just as a little preview, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, coming up next week, we are all going to be in the city of brotherly love. The brothers are going to be loving each other in the city that was invented for that kind of thing, Philadelphia, for the Democratic National Convention. And as a preview for that, for the sort of, I'd like to do a brief Chapo reading series for this week. This comes to us via a friend of the show and friend of Street Fight, Twitter user IonOhio, Arch Stanton. Shout out to him. He sent us these clips that were culled from the DNC hack by that WikiLeaks did this week. WikiLeaks released a whole bunch of internal communications from the DNC that, among other things, show that they had been colluding with the Hillary Clinton campaign against Bernie from day one. And plan to do things like bring up the fact that he's a godless Jew at various points, but none of those are as good as these little snippets, and that I want to read from now. These are from something about, like, they're trying to come up, they're spitballing about things to come up with for the Republican convention. This is a The subject line is counter convention sketch, and they're trying to come up with fun, kind of pithy, like viral ready, like things that they can stage at the Republican convention in Cleveland. Okay.
All right. This sounds great. I love the readings.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Counter convention sketch. First idea. Hand out placards with Trump's face superimposed on the world's largest cuckoo clock. Housed in Sugar Creek, Ohio. Brian, have you been to the world's largest cuckoo clock in Sugar Creek, Ohio?
I have not. I will try to get my way out there. But no, I've never seen it. But this is a great idea, though. Where even fucking is Sugar Creek, Ohio?
Well, these first two are like very tagged to local roadside attractions in Ohio. The next one is, I love this. It says, still fleshing this one out. Keep at it.
Says, never give up.
Still fleshing this one out. Thomas Edison was born in Milan, Ohio. Hand out light bulbs because the light bulb hasn't gone off with the GOP. Something like... And I just love it. There's ellipses after that, and it just says, something like that. Honestly, our fucking, the Google Doc that we keep doing to, like, that we keep running to, like, plan out our shows is fucking better put together than this shit. It's unbelievable. Okay, the next one. This is just under ideas, and these are just quick hits. Ideas. Host a Democratic happy hour. Need a break from the racism and misogyny? Come join the Democrats at a happy hour.
Fuck you, bitch. It's racism 24/7. Racism is back, bitch. I'm not taking a break.
A lot of these are just about drinking. The next one is host a breakfast and serve Baileys and cereal. That's disgusting.
Well, yeah, it sounds like shit.
That is awful.
Yeah, okay, we're going to own Dangerous Donald by making cocktails with gin and cheese whiz.
Just imagine, like, okay, you were drinking the last night at the Democratic happy hour. You, like, the racism and misogyny, you need to get away from it, so you got blasted drunk. So just wake up in the morning, a little hair of the dog, and just have a big bowl of alcoholic cereal with a cream-based liqueur.
It says something about what it's like to be a fucking Democrat, isn't it? Like, that's liberalism, is like, just fucking drink. to doll you to some moderate space so that you can accept shit.
Okay, next idea. Flyers or missing persons folder for Republicans who aren't there.
What the fuck does that even like, mean?
You know,
hey, you know all those unfuckable, disgusting fucking chuds from Congress who everyone on Earth hates? They're not here to endorse Donald. Makes you think.
The DNC must hire us to come up with better ideas. Because immediately I just thought, hire an actor, even hire the actor himself to dress up like a cop, like Robert Patrick from T2, and just hand out pictures of Ben Sasse. Have you seen this boy?
What about go door to door and hand people pieces of bologna because Donald Trump's crime stats are all lies?
And every one of these is better than the horse shit that they're fucking the DNC.
Oh, okay, how about this? So I buy a dodo bird, and I go, this bird is called Dodo Donald.
Better yet, invest $1 trillion in cloning the now extinct dodo birds and reintroducing them to Cleveland like pigeons.
Yeah, so all the open carry guys can make them extinct again, and then Hillary can tweet, like, making dodo birds extinct for a second time in humanity's history. We're better than this.
We're better than this, America. Okay.
Right, this may not be a dodo bird, but my patience is extinct.
Okay, here's the next actual real idea. Hand out masquerade masks for people who don't want to be seen at the convention. Sorry, Roger Stone already did that in his hotel suite. Oh God, the next one. This is hey, hey, you know what was the best decade? The 90s, folks. This one is stage a Jerry Springer show. It doesn't say anything else. It just says stage a Jerry Springer show.
Yeah, that's some good ass shit. That's some good ass shit.
Hillary Clinton and Vince McMahon are the two people that still pay attention to Jerry Springer.
Yeah, like, I like how topical these are. Like, all right, guys, we're going to make a Sweet Valley High cover, but with Donald Trump on it.
Okay, this next one is actually offensive, coming from the Democratic National Convention. You ready for this? Meet with the hotel trades, SEIU, and Fight for 15 about staging a strike.
Wish they'd change their name to Fight for 12. Then I might be able to do that.
This is great because, we'll have a meeting with them and then immediately sell out everything that they believe
in. First things first, SEIU, I know you're fighting for 15, but could we shave $3 off of that? Now please march with us.
Next one. This one is great. Get liberal musicians involved, and then in parentheses, especially those from Ohio. Brian, who are the best liberal musicians from Ohio?
I don't know. We might
have. The only guy I can even think of is fucking Tim Ripper Owens, the guy from Judas Priest, and I don't think he's liberal.
Probably not. I don't know. Who knows, though? He owns a bar.
Next bullet point, engage local radio. we're on with Boomer and the Nuge.
That's my fucking dream, is if they engage Looper and Randy here in Columbus. Oh my God.
Will Hillary take her top off?
They're like, we're giving away tickets for the BBBBQ bash. The extra B is for beer. And then we'll be talking to Debbie Wasserman Schultz coming up.
Hello, Loper and Randy. I have always loved Fartmaster.
Tim Kaine's going to be in here later. We're going to throw onion rings at his boner.
Hola, me llamo Tim Kaine, soy listenando, Loper and Randy.
Those are some weird balls, Tim Kaine!
Next one, have a unity conference with Sanders surrogates.
What?
Whoever wrote this email is just trying to fuck Rosario Dawson. He's like, I volunteer to go. Can I get a new lanyard for the meeting,
like,
by the way?
Can we get the chick from Gone Girl?
Yeah.
Next one, hand out barf bags. I mean, it's so hot, that's actually a good idea.
Let's hand out iPads that have the GIF of a dumpster fire on them, and you go, this is the Republican fucking Party.
This is actually one that I can get behind. Like, if Democrats started just showing up to fucking Trump rallies and barfing in bags and leaving them laying around, that would almost be cool.
That's like the coolest thing Democrats have ever done, if they did that.
It's the coolest thing they came up with. Yeah. And then, I mean, this is the one I'm not going to make fun of.
Yeah, like, it's like this. That was written by, like, the one smart guy in the DNC. He's like, all the ideas are like, how about we say we interview one of Donald's neighbors and we say that he's a bad neighbor. But this guy's like, yo, I really like your ideas, but what if we send somebody to shit themselves and have diarrhea on the floor?
He's a fucking Gigi Allen deli.
Yeah. He doesn't even laminate his lanyard. He's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Host a happy hour, safe space for women to get away from GOP's sexism and misogyny. That's just a repeat of the one. They're repeating ideas, and they haven't even done like a dozen of them. And finally, the final bullet point is, use billboards or airport advertisements. I hope someone was paid to do this, by the way.
I'd be too.
Like I said, how disturbed I was by the Trump speech. But what really, really, really scared me when it was over was thinking that, okay, that just happened. What is opposing him? And almost immediately, I went online, and the first thing I saw after that horrific speech was that Hillary has unleashed a Trump yourself Facebook app.
No.
Where you put, like, you put a picture in it, and then it'll put Trump in front of you, like, insulting you or something, or saying something, one of his speeches. And it really, it's like, to see them do this desperate, like, shit, this pandering, it really reminds you, oh, yeah, the reason they're doing this is because they don't have a substantive response to Trump. Like, I want to read the very end of Trump's speech, because it really speaks to the real, like, rottenness at the core of the system that explains why he is here and why he's so popular. He said, "Big business, elite media, and major donors are lining up behind the campaign of my opponent because they know she will keep our rigged system in place. They are throwing money at her because they have total control over everything she does. She is their puppet, and they pull the strings. That is why Hillary Clinton's message is that things will never change. My message is that things have to change, and they have to change right now. Every day I wake up determined to deliver for the people I have met all across this nation that have been neglected, ignored, and abandoned. I have visited the laid-off factory workers and the communities crushed by our horrible and unfair trade deals. These are the forgotten men and women of our country, people who work hard but no longer have a voice. I am your voice." I mean, what does Hillary substantively say in response to that besides, hey, who wants a Snapchat of me nay-naying? Because it's fucking true. She does preside over a rigged economic system. You have no voice in this system. He's exploiting the absolute collapse of the legitimacy of the neoliberal consensus, and there's nothing on the other side to stop him.
All right, so you say that, but we just came out with an app. It's called Cuck Yourself.
Male wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah, I like it. Matt McGorry, Neb Shulman, God, fucking Al Giordano.
Al Giordano's my favorite. Fucking Al Giordano's in Philadelphia next week. I want 10 pictures with him, shaking his hand.
Hell yes.
I mean, it'd be funny, but I don't want to get like fucking Hantavirus or Parvo or whatever the fuck he's got.
He seems to be aging 5 years every 2 weeks.
Whenever he travels, he leaves a trail of Legionnaire's disease behind him.
I want to kiss Al Giordano too. It'll be like the classic Simpsons joke about kissing Hans Moleman, and he's like, it's like kissing a peanut. Kissing Al Giordano is like, would be like kissing the boiled peanuts that they have in South Carolina.
It just tastes like ashtray and resentment.
I think that about does it for this week, guys. But I'm looking forward to seeing all of you guys in Philadelphia for the DNC. And you rest assured that we will have plenty to talk about coming out of Philly, because we're all going to be on the ground experiencing it in real life.
And culminating in an awesome live show at Everybody Hits on Thursday night.
Yeah, yes. I can promise that show's gonna kick ass. Even if you just
it's
like
be fucking awesome.
Yeah, even if you just like hitting baseballs. I mean, shit, it's BYOB and there's baseballs, and you know I'm gonna have like 80 grams of kratom with me this week.
Yeah, motherfucker. it's also BYOA, as we've talked about. Bring your own activist.
Yeah. Please bring me drugs. I really love, like, piles of drugs. So, like, if you want to really make one of the performers happy, just bring a pile of drugs for us.
If you know anyone in Philly who can get lean, please contact us at chapotraphouse@gmail.com. So, onward to Philly. Gentlemen.
See you boys there.
Hell yeah.
We ride. We ride for Philly.
Yeah, bitch.
Wolves assemble. All right, guys. See you soon.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Peace.
You don't drink what I drink. You don't smoke what I smoke. You don't think like I think. You don't just.